Supreme Personality of Godhead.
And for the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Anivikshan.
Anivikshan.
Meditating by keeping constantly in view.
Meditating by keeping constantly in view.
Kaivalyam.
Kaivalyam.
Solitude.
Solitude.
Aniketatam.
Aniketatam.
Having no fixed residence.
Having no fixed residence.
Vivikta Tira. Scraps of cloth found in unfrequented places.
Scraps of cloth found in unfrequented places.
Vasanam.
Vasanam.
Wearing.
Wearing.
Santosham.
Santosham.
Satisfaction.
Satisfaction.
Yena kanachit.
Yena kanachit.
With anything.
With anything.
Translation. One should practice meditation by constantly seeing oneself to be an eternal cognizant spirit soul and seeing the Lord to be the absolute controller of everything. To increase one's meditation, one should live in a secluded place and give up false attachment to one's home, household paraphernalia. Giving up the decorations of the temporary material body, one should dress himself with scraps of clothing found in rejected places or with the bark of trees. In this way, one should learn to be satisfied in any material situation. Translation responsibly. One should practice meditation. By constantly seeing oneself.
By constantly seeing oneself.
To be an eternal cognizant spirit soul.
To be an eternal cognizant spirit soul.
And seeing the Lord to be.
And seeing the Lord to be.
The absolute controller of everything.
The absolute controller of everything.
To increase one's meditation.
To increase one's meditation.
One should live in a secluded place.
One should live in a secluded place.
And give up false attachment.
And give up false attachment.
To one's home and household paraphernalia. Giving up the decorations of temporary material body.
Giving up the decorations of temporary material body.
One should dress himself.
One should dress himself.
With scraps of cloth found in rejected places.
With scraps of cloth found in rejected places.
Or with the bark of trees.
Or with the bark of trees.
In this way, one should learn to be.
In this way, one should learn to be
satisfied in any material situation.
Satisfied in any material situation.
Om Agyana Kimaranda Shyakananda Nashalakya Chakshurimini Kamminata Mashuri Venmaha Namo Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Vasai Vidureshi Mari Vidaya Namibu Swamiti Namaha Namo Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Vasai Vidureshi Mari Bhakti Vidaya Swamiti Namaha Namaste Saraswati Devi Dolavani Vichani Vaneva Sesha Shimunavi Vashya Chakrasana Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivananda Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna
Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare
Hare Rama, Hare Rama,
Hare Rama, Hare Rama. So everybody should dress in bark and remnants of old cloth from now on. The instructions there from the Bhagavad Gita. So purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Kaivalyam, or living in a secluded place, indicates a place free from material disturbances. Therefore, one should live in the association of the Vaishnavas, where the common goal is advancing in Krishna consciousness, especially in the Kali Yuga. If one tries to remain physically isolated from all others, the result will be degradation or insanity. Aniketanam means that one should not be intoxicated by the ephemeral satisfaction of one's home sweet home, which will vanish at any moment by unforeseen circumstances produced by one's previous activities. In this age, it is not actually possible to dress in the tree bark in modern cities. Although sometimes in the city you see somebody who gets pretty close. They're pretty rough. Nor to wear mere scraps of clothing. Previously, human culture accommodated those practicing tapasya or penance in the interest of spiritual advancement. In this age, however, the most urgent necessity is for preaching the message of Bhagavad Gita throughout human society. Therefore, it is recommended that Vaishnavas dress with clean and neat cloth, covering their bodies decently, so that the conditioned souls will not be frightened or repulsed by the severe penance of the Vaishnavas. In the Kali Yuga, the conditioned souls are extremely attached to material sense gratification, and extreme austerities are not appreciated, but instead considered abominable denials of the flesh. Of course, austerity is required for spiritual advancement, but practical example set by Srila Prabhupada in successfully spreading the Krishna consciousness movement was that all material things should be used to attract people to Krishna consciousness. Therefore, Vaishnavas may at times adopt ordinary dress to serve the higher principle of distributing Krishna consciousness. In any case, One should learn to be satisfied in any material situation as to prepare for the moment of death. According to Bhagavad Gita, at the time of death, the particular consciousness we have created in this life will carry us to our future situation. Therefore, human life can be seen as a type of practice for successfully fixing one's mind on the absolute truth during the severe trials of death. So it says that, generally speaking, no person is an island. No, I'm an island, I'm a rock. But basically speaking, nobody is an island. We all want to live with others. And yet it's recommended here that we live in a secluded place. So what does that really mean? So it's pointed out here by Srila Rivananda Maharaj that it's a place free from material disturbance, being with Krishna. So we don't have to head off to the hills and meditate in a little hut or a humpy out in the back. Although that's nice sometimes. It's nice to go to the farm and just chant in the bush. We used to have a really isolated farm in Mildura, which was set thousands, hundreds and hundreds of miles away from anywhere. New Gaudadesh it was called. Very beautiful place. And one of the highlights was that it was so removed, it was so desolate, it was so far away from everything. And sometimes in the mornings we would get an opportunity to do our japa walks through the bush, and then you would come along to the Murray River, and it was totally secluded. Nobody was there. Nobody for miles and miles and miles. And you would sit there and meditate, and be so, if you came from the city, it would be so quiet that your ears would be ringing still from the city. And it took you a couple of days to actually acclimatise to the peace and quiet that was there. So it was a beautiful place, but you couldn't stay there for long. Ultimately it felt like coming back to the devotees and having big kirtans like you just had. This is also being in a secluded place. A secluded place with Krishna. The devotees are always trying to find a secluded place with Krishna, just to be with Krishna. We may be in a room full of people chanting kirtan, having ecstatic kirtan. And that's wonderful, and we have our association, but internally we're also developing an incredible connection with Krishna, internally, the feeling that Krishna is there. And the other devotees in that association are helping you, bringing you up to that level of understanding that Krishna is within my heart, and actually appreciating the deity form of the Lord, and appreciating Srila Prabhupada. Whereas sometimes by ourselves we lose that connection, and so we need that energy, that push from the other devotees to also experience that surge of love for Krishna. So to be secluded, we have to be secluded. Some time of the day we have to be secluded, and that time to be secluded is when we're chanting our own. We may be in a room packed with people, all chanting and meditating and helping us in our sadhana. But at the same token, we're very much alone. We're very much with Krishna, and we're communicating with Krishna. And there could be millions and millions of people, but the chanting is just for us. It's that very thing that we do in great solitude. One time I was... remember when Urmala Prabhu was here? Very, very advanced devotee. Very nice devotee. And I had to ask her something that she wanted me to do something, some design for a book that she was doing. And you know how sometimes you actually interrupt somebody in their japa, you know, inadvertently, hey Prabhu, and have a little bit of a chit chat and stuff. Anyway, I did that. She was chanting out here, and I said, excuse me Prabhu, you know, I might see you later on, and blah blah blah. Anyway, she said, excuse me Prabhu. She was so humble and very nice, you know, she said, excuse me Prabhu, but this is my time to be with Krishna. And it really dawned on me, it really hit me, you know, that she was actually putting aside this time to be with Krishna, you know. And it stuck with me, it really stuck with me, that our meditation time is such an important time to meditate on Krishna, to just really focus our attention on Krishna. So I've taken that to heart. So we associate with people of like mind, you know, to help us. We're not alone in our Krishna consciousness, and so thereby group meditation, group chanting or meditation is so important. Even when we're home, I find it personally really important that when I'm home and I'm chanting by myself or with bhakti, it's important, or I personally like to have the chanting of Srila Prabhupada. with the devotees in Vrindavan. And when you close your eyes, you can hear still that association, perhaps the association with the other Vaishnavas. And that makes you at least feel satisfied. You're not alone, but yet you're still alone with Krishna. So it's pointed out in this purport here that in the Kali Yuga, to be isolated, to just remove yourself, and this is also indicative of when we were up at Gaudadesh, this farm out in Mildura, you have materialists that are living out in the sticks. And there was one place where this guy, he lived in an old humpy, you know, like an old derelict sort of shed. And he was completely degraded and totally insane. He never spoke to anybody. He just ate what he could. He had canned food, and I think he went into town once a month or something. So as it's pointing out in the purport here, that to be alone or isolated in the Kali Yuga without Krishna consciousness is actually you go insane or you become degraded. So in association, standards are often set for us. The standards to be with devotees, how to deal with devotees, how to react to devotees. Just like Umrata Prabhu reminded me that this was her time to be with Krishna. Similarly, we remind each other, Prabhu, you know, don't fall asleep. Wake up, you know, chant your own. So these gentle reminders help us, assist us, to act selflessly, to give ourselves in solitude to Krishna. So there's this section here, aniketatam, which means that one should not be intoxicated by the peripheral satisfaction of one's home sweet home. Home sweet home. Isn't this a real American sort of saying, you know? This is my home sweet home. And they've got these little signs, you know, that they have as you come into the house, you know, home sweet home. So, home sweet home, which vanishes at a moment by an unforeseen circumstance produced by one's previous activities. So we can see that this home sweet home illusion, this dream of our own little home, has been smashed for a lot of people at the moment. Because of the economic downturn, especially in the United States, this home sweet home dream has since been absolutely squashed. I don't know if you follow the news, but there's some news and current affair programs, and they interview, and in particular in America, all these homes that have been repossessed by the banks, you know, and there are people that are so desperate, you know, they've put their heart and soul into these houses, and all of a sudden it's getting taken away, and they're completely destroyed. One lady had to revert to living in the back of a car, and she had a beautiful home, and this was taken away from her. So it's really a sad situation that we've placed so much emphasis on this home sweet home, you know. We understand that at any circumstance, at any moment, our circumstances could change. At any moment, we think, oh yes, we're secure, we've got a nice job, we've got a nice house, we've got a nice life, we've got a nice this, we've got everything, it's all for me, I'm very happy. And all of a sudden something comes in and spoils the whole lot. And you wonder, what the heck happened? What happened? Why did this happen all of a sudden? So Krishna's pointing out here that everything is ephemeral. That this is just a very fleeting thing. And any unforeseen circumstance, a fire could come, an accident could come. And our home, as I was pointing out in the last class that I gave, our home in actuality is Krishna's property. Everything that we have is Krishna's property. That's how a Vaishnava looks at their situation, at their material situation. Everything we have is actually Krishna. So Krishna owns the house. It's not our house. We're caretakers of the house, but we look after it for Krishna. And so if something happens, then we understand we do our best to protect Krishna's home, but we're never attached to it thinking that it's our mine. I have that possession, it's not mine. So we associate to remain in this self-satisfied position of understanding that everything belongs to Krishna and everything is owned by Krishna and we're simply the servants of Krishna. This consciousness is atmarama, or self-satisfied, to be self-satisfied. To be really in connection with Krishna and understanding that Krishna owns everything is a state of atmarama. It's to be completely self-satisfied. Now in the last class that I was giving on partnerships and marriage and so on and so forth, one thing that I forgot to mention was that sometimes in a partnership or in any relationship really, we are not to We're not to actually have a relationship or a partnership that fills a particular need for us. A devotee doesn't take on a partner or in a marriage just to fulfill a particular need, or act in a certain way in a relationship just to fulfill a need, to fill gaps in our lives, whether that's a sexual gap or a financial gap or whatever. In our relationships with one another, we actually have another relationship is even in a guru situation. You know, we don't take on a guru just to fulfill a father figure or a mother figure or whatever. We actually want to have a relationship with another person to assist us spiritually and to allow us to assist them spiritually. That is the nature of a relationship. So we shouldn't just take it that it's something that fulfills a need. We need so much to be assisted in our spiritual life. As it was pointed out in the verse that I gave last week, it's a desperate situation to get out of this material life. As it pointed out the last thing here, in the last section of this purport, in any case, one should learn to be satisfied in any material situation so to prepare for the moment of death. I know it sounds a bit morbid, but actually that's the process that we're doing. We're preparing for death. Death to a devotee is not a negative thing. It's a very joyful thing. It's a very wonderful thing. And when we're preparing our whole life to be in this consciousness of Atmarama, to be self-sufficient, to be completely connected with Krishna, to actually appreciate Krishna everywhere and that everything belongs to Krishna, and I'm simply his servant, then actually we're preparing our consciousness correctly. So the next point that was mentioned here, and that is, you know, basically we have to surrender ourselves, this quality of surrendering, understanding who Krishna is. Krishna is the Supreme. Krishna, there is no truth superior. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, there is no truth superior to me. Everything that exists, I'm like the invisible thread behind it all, like pearls on a thread, like pearls on a necklace. Krishna says, I'm that invisible thread. You don't even see Krishna sometimes, you know, but he's the invisible thread behind everything that exists. And so somehow or other, our life, our consciousness should be directed towards seeing Krishna everywhere in our life. And when that consciousness is there, then we actually make advancement and we can actually train ourselves to be ready to accept death when it comes. So we have to surrender 100%. Now the next part that was mentioned here was this interesting part of dressing up in bark or scraps of clothing. So this is not possible for us. You know, it may have been possible in past ages, but it isn't now. Now at this time of the year, there's an incredible emphasis on how a person dresses, isn't it? With the Melbourne Cup, the Derby, the Cox's Day, the Ladies' Day. Has anybody gone into the city and seen, you know, how well-dressed, so to speak, the society is at that point of time? I mean, the ladies are there in their finest. You know, they wear the best clothes, they spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars. The guys have got their Armani suits and the ladies have got these crazy little feather hats and stuff. Actually, from a devotee point of view, it looks absolutely absurd, you know. It looks so ridiculous, and they've got these high heel little shoes, you know, and their silk stockings, and they're walking around like walking on a tightrope. And they're actually, from a devotee understanding, they're just decorating a dead body, really. This mass of flesh, blood, soul, urine. And they're dressing it up so nicely for no other reason but to either show themselves off to see how I'm so beautiful, or to attract another person, or to entice another person, or just by the mere fact of showing their opulence or whatever. But it's all just decorations of a dead body. And the ultimate end of it is it all comes crashing down at the end, because they get so inebriated, so intoxicated, you know, that their dresses fall down, their shirt comes undone. And the funny thing was, on the news this week, it was so interesting, you know, because in the morning I saw them when I was going to Gopal, and they're all in their fineries, you know, walking to the station, you know. These feather things is just such a weird thing. They've got this one blob of feather, you know. I mean, we dress for years and it's always balanced enough, but these people, they dress these feather things, popping out like this. Anyway, so the funny thing was, I got home and I was watching the news that night, and apparently the trains had stopped, right? So all these people, number one, they're inebriated. Number two, they've been out in the sun all day, so they're red raw like an oyster, you know, like a crayfish, you know. And their feathered hat is hanging down here somewhere, you know, their glasses are over like this, and their ties are undone, their jackets are off, they've kicked their high heel shoes off, and these guys had to walk back home, you know, and they're completely dejected. It was so funny. And for a devotee to see this is actually just such an incredible thing to see. So they're just dressing their bodies for no other end but just to agitate. And at the end, it's all just a mess, you know. Like even they do that when I was working in a crematorium at one stage. I was a gardener in a crematorium, and I would get the opportunity to watch how they would put the body in a casket. And they always dress the corpse of the body for the person that's having the funeral. They would always dress them immaculately. They would ask the people for the best suit that they had, right? Or the best dress that the lady had. They'd put all makeup on, and so there'd be the body in the coffin, ready to go. Dressed to the finest, you know? For everybody to just have that last bit of appreciation. What a wonderful person that was, you know? So talk about preparing for death. But then, this was such an eye-opener for me when I was working there. Krishna is so wonderful how he arranges different things for you in your life to learn lessons. So I saw, you know, how they dressed them and everything, but I also saw the next stage. Like what would happen is, they would be dressed there, and we've all been to funerals, and then they would close the casket after everybody's seen it, and then at the crematorium that I was working, it would go down in a little escalator type of thing, and then it would shoot out the back, and they'd have these big pizza burners, and the coffin would go in there. So myself and a friend of mine, who were gardeners, you know, the guys in the furnace part said, "Why don't you come in and have a look?" You know, and I thought, "Yeah, this is a," because I was starting to get into transcendental life. I was starting to get into spiritual life. I thought, "Yeah, this could be good to learn something from this." The other guy was really reluctant, and he said, "Come and have a look. See what happens, you know." So I thought, yeah, okay. And the curiosity with all of us is to have a look in something like that. So in this furnace, there's a little slit of glass where the operator actually sees if it's been completed, if the job has been done. So here you have this wonderful person dressed up in the finest, dead. It's a dead body. The soul is no longer there, but everybody's still attached, so they're dressing nicely. So in goes the coffin, and I'm just sitting there watching, and the furnace goes on. You know, all of a sudden, the coffin bursts open. It like you know the moisture or the contents just bursts open, and the body goes, stands up, and then just fire. The guy that I was with, Murray went boing, passed out, faded, couldn't handle it, completely destroyed. But it left such an image on me, because here we have the situation where we're dressing the body in its finery, last moment, and in the end, just incinerated, gone, puff of smoke. So this was really interesting. So we don't dress. Now devotees dress. What do devotees dress for? We dress to please Krishna. So we'd wear the clothes that Srila Prabhupada liked to see. Prabhupada was often asked, you know, what pleases you, Prabhupada? Prabhupada said, "It pleases me to see the devotees dressed like they were coming from Vaikuntha." So he'd love to see devotees dressed in opulent saris, nice dhoti kurta. It's so nice to see the brahmacharis now with the saffron. For many years it was only a smattering of saffron here and there, but now you see these bright orange and shiny faced brahmacharis and the grihasthas nicely dressed. So we dress for Krishna. We don't dress indecently. We don't dress to agitate. Even when we're out in the material world, when we're doing our business, when we're doing our sankirtan or just our business, going about, a devotee is always dressed neatly. Always neatly. And that's to attract Krishna, to show that if a person meets us, if we're looking, sometimes I feel actually a bit embarrassed sometimes because I do painting. And if you've ever done painting, you get paint all over yourself. So I have a set of clothes that are just dedicated to painting. And sometimes I answer the door, you know, And if somebody's come to the door while I'm painting, I've got paint all over my hands, all over the place. Sometimes somebody comes to ask about meditation or spiritual life. I'm thinking, oh God, you know, hang on, I think I'll just go and get changed, you know, because it's so... Because a devotee always wants to please Krishna by dressing nicely when they're presenting the philosophy of Srila Prabhupada, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So the clothing that a Vaishnava wears is not necessarily a set uniform. When we analyse actually the clothing that we wear, the ladies wear saris, and then wear dhoti and kurta, when we're here at the temple, it's really, when you analyse it, my spiritual master was saying that actually there is no mention in the Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita that ladies are supposed to wear saris. Nowhere. The word sari is never mentioned in the scriptures. Similarly, you know how devotees, we wear kurtas. Well, kurtas are actually a contribution that the Muslim community has given to the Vaishnava community. Because formerly, the Vaishnavas never wore any sewn shirt. But we think, okay, you've got to wear a kurta, you know. So, but that's not necessarily so. The main thing is that a devotee dressed very chastely, is very chaste in their dressing, is very neat, is not agitating anyone. Recently, when we went to Malaysia, and this was astounding. When we went to Malaysia, we were in Kuala Lumpur, and Bhakti and I were staying in a hotel, and we just went for some sightseeing and some shopping. And Malaysia is basically a Muslim country, especially where we were. There was a mosque just close by. The ladies there that were in the shopping mall, now you've got a shopping mall like Chadston or Southland or something like that. This shopping mall was run principally by people dedicated to the Muslim faith. Their dress was immaculate. Their dress was so chaste, you know. Not necessarily that they all had the scarf on, the veil, but just their consciousness. The women were covered nicely, they were attractive, the colours were really, you know. It made such a difference to your consciousness. It made such an uplifting, pleasant environment to do your activities in, that it made an impact on me. Even though these people weren't Vaishnavas, they were still practicing modesty and chastity. It is such an important thing. Whereas if we go anywhere, anywhere in this material situation here in the West, in these countries, the devotees are confronted every day by, you know, sort of unattractive and promiscuous dress. And we have to deal with it, and it's very difficult. So we must remember to always remain chaste in our dress, whatever we do. Prabhupada made a point of that. Prabhupada always said that even if you're preaching, it's not necessary that you have to necessarily wear the Vaishnava dress, but always make sure that you're well presented. So this was very, very important. And if you see any of the leaders within the society, you see Devamrita Swami, he looks absolutely pukka at any stage. All the different devotees, you know, always look so pukka, so clean and neat. So it's very important. We don't want to, and this cleanliness actually, as it said here, attracts people. The last thing that we want to do is repulse people from Krishna consciousness. That's why it's mentioned in the cloth, in the purport here, that we don't wear scraps of clothing or bits of bark. I mean, that would really be quite confronting to the general populace if we went walking around in that sort of gear. So we have we take care of ourselves. In the old days, we used to actually have to really tell devotees, look, Prabhu, would you, because we were coming out of a hippie era, you know, and everything was okay, man. So cool, man. We used to have odd socks. People, remember Prabhuda? There would be odd socks, and there would be odd sort of clothing that people would wear. It was just really a mishmash, you know. So some devotees that weren't inclined that way would have to tell other devotees, listen, would you mind changing your socks and just wear normal socks, or, you know, socks that match, or maybe ones that haven't got holes in them, or would you mind cleaning your feet, or cutting your toenails, or... So it's very important in our preaching that every aspect of our personal attire and appearance is attractive. Because, you know, the conditioned souls, they don't like to be confronted with something that's out of the norm, you know. Like even there is an interesting thing. Some devotees find it, and this is as you're getting older, it's quite interesting. A lot of, you know, I'm not criticizing those devotees who do it, but sometimes it's quite interesting. Some devotees think that it's advantageous, men especially, I don't think it happens to too many women, grow hair in their ears when you're getting older. Have you noticed this? Now, Prabhupada came from the west, from the east, and sometimes it said, well, you know, sure, Prabhupada has hair in his ear, but he's a gentleman that comes from India. And so, generally speaking, people accepted that Prabhupada was a little different. But when you see a western person, and the western person sometimes has a good crop of hair growing out of their ears, right? And it looks actually quite, quite different. And I've had people say, you know, I really liked what that gentleman was saying about Krishna consciousness, but could he do something about the hair growing out of his ears? And literally some devotee friends of mine that I know had hair growing out of their ears, you know. So things like that, we have to actually keep a check to make sure that we're looking nice and neat. Because it disturbs people and it can repulse people to Krishna consciousness. And that's the last thing that we want to do. In any of our activities, we don't want to repulse people from Krishna consciousness. We want to attract people to Krishna consciousness. So it's very, very important. The thing that attracts people the most is cleanliness, as I've said, but also friendliness, being incredibly friendly, being open to people. Because that's what everybody is searching for. They're searching for their best friend, which is Krishna, within their heart. In solitude, they know that Krishna is there somewhere, you know, in their deep, dark recesses of their consciousness. They know that there's more to life than just sense gratification, and deep down they know that actually my very dear friend is the supreme creator of everything, Krishna. So we, when we present Krishna consciousness, we're representing Krishna. So we have to help them to develop their love for Krishna, and the way we do it is through friendliness. As I was mentioning in the last class, Sankirtan actually means to be incredibly friendly to people. So that when that friendship, and it's not exploited friendship, it is a giving, selfless friendship. We just want to give love to these people because we're feeling that ecstasy of loving Krishna within ourselves. And then that bubbles over to give to other people. That's real Sankirtan. So this is really incumbent upon us. We have to develop that in our Sankirtan. That's what actually attracts people and doesn't repulse people. Then there is the point of austerity. But Prabhupada says, you know, we, as it's mentioned here also, we have to perform austerity. To develop spiritual life, we have to develop austerity. There's no two ways about it. So how do we do that? How do we do the austerity? In the past, in previous ages, the whole point of wearing bark or just a copan or living with just a shawl or whatever was an austerity to perform penance, to gain knowledge, to gain control over oneself, to condition ourselves to being, to understanding that we're actually a spirit soul, non-material living entity. And so that was the reason for austerity. Now in this age we understand that that's not the right attitude, to go and live in a secluded place and live in bark and so on and so forth, but still we have to perform austerity. The greatest austerity, as is pointed out by Srila Prabhupada and in this verse also, is that austerity of spreading love of Godhead, spreading the news that Krishna is within your heart, that Krishna loves you, and that you should surrender everything, that Krishna owns everything, and that you should surrender to Krishna. That is the greatest austerity. And that is first and foremost a devotee's job. I just wanted to read one little section of the Bhagavad Gita where that is mentioned. And it's a sloka that's not usually mentioned. It's in the divisions of faith. And Prabhupada, the Krishna says, but sacrifices, austerities and charities performed without faith in the Supreme are non-permanent, O son of Britta, regardless of what rites are performed. They are called asa and are useless both in this life and in the next. So the materialists also perform all sorts of austerities and charities, but it's without faith, without that understanding that Krishna is the beneficiary of all our austerities. So Prabhupada's purport to that is, anything done without the transcendental objective, whether it be sacrifice, charity or penance, is useless. Therefore in this verse it is declared that such activities are abominable. Everything should be done for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. for the supreme Krishna consciousness. Without such faith, without proper guidance, there can never be any fruit. In all the Vedic scriptures, faith in the supreme is advised. In the pursuit of all Vedic instructions, the ultimate goal is understanding Krishna. No one can obtain success without following this principle. Therefore, the best course is to work from the very beginning in Krishna consciousness under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. That is the way to make everything successful. In the conditioned state, people are attracted to worshipping the demigods, ghosts, yakshas like Kuvera. The mode of goodness is better than the mode of passion and ignorance, but one who takes directly to Krishna consciousness is transcendental to all the three modes. Although there is a process of gradual elevation, if one, by the association of a pure devotee, of pure devotees, takes directly to Krishna consciousness, that is the best way, and that is recommended in this chapter. To achieve success in this way, one must find a proper spiritual master and receive training under his or her direction. Then one can achieve faith in the Supreme, and when that faith matures in the course of time, it is called love of God. This love is the ultimate goal of the living entity, and one should therefore take to Krishna consciousness directly. So this is Srila Prabhupada. We have to have faith in Krishna and in the spiritual master, and in that way utilize everything in Krishna consciousness movement. Now the Krishna consciousness movement is different as opposed to a religion, and I've made this point once before. Our society, the Krishna Consciousness Society, is a movement. It is something that is progressive. It is something that's on the move. It is not static. And that's the difference between spiritual life and a spiritual activity. What most religions do, they have a spiritual activity which they may perform once a week, three times a day, so on and so forth. But a spiritual life means that every second of the day is dedicated to our consciousness of developing our love to God. So everything we do, the food that we eat, the associates that we have, the work that we do, everything, the dress that we have, is all Krishna conscious. We maintain a consciousness of always putting Krishna first. So Krishna consciousness is not a churchology. It's not just a place that we go to do a little puja or a bit of worship and then we go back to the material world with some understanding that we've had some piety, some upliftment, and now we can go back to material life. No. Krishna consciousness is a community. It is a community of like-minded individuals helping one another, selflessly helping one another and uplifting one another to a standard of higher and higher Krishna consciousness. So we in Krishna consciousness are a living vital force of change. Now there's one interesting pastime with Srila Prabhupada. When Srila Prabhupada was just about to leave the planet, days before, he summoned Giriraj Swami. Giriraj Swami is a very advanced devotee, very nice devotee, very really transcendental man. And he summons him to come to Prabhupada. So he went to Prabhupada. Prabhupada was on his bed and he called him over and whispered in his ear and he said, "What will allow this movement to go on?" He whispered this to Giriraj Swami. "What will allow this movement to go on?" And Giriraj Swami said, "Oh, Srila Prabhupada, you know, if all the devotees chant their rounds properly and if all the devotees, you know, regularly read and follow the regulative principles." And said, Prabhupada turned around and he said, "What is needed is intelligence and organization." You've heard that? What is needed is intelligence and organization. This is what Prabhupada wanted. And our austerity in Krishna consciousness is to be incredibly well organized and utilize our intelligence to further push on the Krishna consciousness movement. Prabhupada started a movement. He is our father. He is our grandfather. He is our great, 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 great grandfather for generations to come. He is the fountainhead. He is the lawmaker, and his books will be the law books for the next 10,000 years in this Kali Yuga. He is the pinnacle. Recently there was the disappearance day of Srila Prabhupada, and my spiritual master gave a talk on that. At that point, on his disappearance day, we should focus on Prabhupada reappearing all the time, becoming more and more real to us, instead of disappearing, it becomes more and more prominent in our thinking, and more prominent. And the whole idea behind this growth, this movement of ISKCON, is that it is a growing family. We understand that we're all sons and daughters of Krishna, that we're all spirit souls, that we're all connected with Krishna as the thread going through everything, all of us. And that Krishna loves each and every one of us individually exactly the same. He gives a little bit to some and a little lot like that. But in essence, like a good parent, a parent loves all their children equally. So in the same token, Krishna loves each and every one of us equally. And Prabhupada came to this planet to actually form the Krishna consciousness family. A family. And it is the family business to use our intelligence, to use our imagination, to use our creativity, to use our organisation to actually grow the family business. We have to enhance the family business. We have to strive more and more and more and more. How can we increase? That's our austerity. That's our austerity. It's not a case that we just come to Krishna consciousness and perform the rituals and the ceremonies and that's it. Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada described, is like a railway track. There's two tracks, you know, on a railway line. There is the ceremony and there's the puja, but there's also the preaching. And they both have to go simultaneously exactly the same. The puja is there to purify us, to keep us fixed, to keep us focused, to keep us in faith with Krishna, to understand Krishna more and more, to actually interact with Krishna. But then in the same token, the other rail of the railway line is that going out and outreaching and bringing people to Krishna consciousness. Not fanatically, not in a repulsive way, in a very attractive way, where everything we do should be attractive. So Prabhupada stressed over and over and over again that it's not so important that we have the vapu, the personal association of our guru, it's more important that we have the vani, the instruction. So even our spiritual master may not be present here before us, the representative of Srila Prabhupada, our own spiritual master, may not be there with us every day to guide and direct us. As much as we would like that, you know, for the last 15, 20 odd years, I wanted nothing more than to be with my spiritual master and offer some service. When I see you guys who get an opportunity to serve Dave and Rita Swami, you know, and get to make him lunch or, you know, so on and so forth, I sometimes feel, oh, God, I wish I could be in Los Angeles and do some service to my spiritual master. But it's more important that we, that's my situation, that's our situation. It's more important that we remember the Guru's instruction and follow that instruction, and that is use our intelligence, use our abilities to push on this movement more and more. And in any case, as it's pointed out, in any case one should learn to be satisfied in any material situation so as to prepare for the moment of death. As again, as I said, I don't want to be morbid about it, but this is what we're preparing for. For a devotee, death is glorious. Death is a glorious thing. For us back here, it may be a sad thing that we miss their association, but in another sense, death is a glorious thing. When I witnessed the death of that devotee in India recently when we travelled there, it was just such an ecstatic thing, and after it, everybody felt so uplifted because he had attained a state of Krishna consciousness, which we all strive for, to remember Krishna at the time of death. So we are what we vibrate. We are what we're constantly thinking about. So this whole process that's set up by Srila Prabhupada allows us to constantly remember Krishna, constantly be in the touch with Krishna. And as a group, we help each other along in this path. So we have to carry on the family business, meditate selflessly, have time to go within, have time to actually be removed from society, you know, go within, really deeply go within, take advantage of the time when you're chanting Hare Krishna, to actually use it as a meditation time. Like Umala Prabhu, you know, she was saying, you know, sorry Prabhu, don't disturb me now, I'm talking to Krishna, I'm with Krishna. That's the symptoms of an advanced devotee, to have that understanding that now's my time to be with Krishna. So our meditation time, our chanting time, utilize it properly, in a meditation way that we really connect with Krishna. Nothing else matters. At that time, it's just you and Krishna. And you're offering your humble prayers to Him. My dear Lord, please engage me in your service. Please let me love you. Please come to me. Be with me. I understand you're there. I'm so fallen. Forgive my past offenses. I just want to be with you. And hear His holy name. And in that way, we actually uplift our consciousness so that we can carry on in the day and keep on remembering Krishna. And that is very vital. So we carry on, and then we want to pass that on to other people, keeping the family business alive. Keeping the family business alive. And the result of that is that that consciousness, when we vibrate that consciousness continuously, that consciousness, when we do pass away, will lead us into the arms of Lord Chaitanya, who will be waiting for us to embrace us. Lord Chaitanya's arms are there, ready, open, willing, come and hug you. Krishna is there to hug you. Your spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, are all there. Thank you for helping me. Thank you for pushing on this movement. Thank you for pushing on the family business. You know, they're so grateful. And we are grateful because we have that opportunity. Don't squander that. Now there's a great opportunity at the moment for us to actually push on this family business. And that is the book marathon that's going to be happening within a month or so. We should already start to be using our intelligence as grihasthas and people that come to the temple that may not be able to come to the temple on a regular basis. We should already start using our intelligence and our abilities and our imagination, because this time of book distribution is very important to Srila Prabhupada. The Sankirtan, the Maha Sankirtan at the end of the year was very, very important to Srila Prabhupada. So if we can somehow or other use our intelligence and find out ways that we can actually distribute more of this literature, in ways that are not repulsive, in ways that are very attractive to people, think of how we can do it, how we can couple it with prasadam distribution, how we can distribute it to friends and relatives and so on and so forth. Start thinking now how we can be effective in the family business. That's our objective, that's our austerity, that's what we have to do. We don't have to sit under a tree on the banks of the Murray River. We don't have to wear bark or a copan or a cloth. We don't have to do any of that. We just have to become intelligent and think, how can we spread this Krishna consciousness? And this is a great opportunity. We at Gopals are trying to think of ways that we can up the ante and distribute more books. Somehow or another, we've got to do it. Because the fallen conditioned souls, they are so sad and sorry. You know, like when I saw those women and men coming from this attempt for sense gratification, you know, they probably lost all their money, they probably lost all their good qualities by being intoxicated, and at the end of it Krishna slapped them one slap further and there's no trains to go back home and they're miserable. So this is life. For the conditioned material souls, this is life. When things happen to a devotee, they understand, this is for a reason. When something calamitous happens, like say for example, if the train didn't come, then that's happened to us. Like if I'm coming home from Gopal's and all of a sudden the train doesn't come. Now a materialist may go, oh god damn, the Conway Airport, you know, such a rotten train system. But a devotee, understanding and having good consciousness, thinks, hang on a tick, this is for my benefit. Something is here that I've got to learn. And one day I had that, and all the people around me were like criticizing, you know, oh damn trains, they're late again, you know. I had the opportunity to sit next to somebody in a crowded train and start talking Krishna consciousness to them, you know? Which I wouldn't have had if the trains were on time. So a devotee always sees that whatever is happening in one's life, even if it's a calamity, even if you think, how the heck is this going to benefit my Krishna consciousness? You'll actually see, in due course of time, if you keep an open mind, if you keep a Krishna consciousness perspective, you'll see there's a benefit for you to learn something. Everything is as it should be. In Krishna consciousness, in our life, if you're a devotee, everything that happens to you on a daily basis is as it should be. You know, to a materialist, you know, they ask, oh, my home sweet home, why is this broken down, all this kind of stuff. But a devotee knows that anything that's coming to me, somehow or other, is as it should be, and I've got to learn from this, and it will develop my Krishna consciousness. And in that state, you stay Krishna conscious. And at the time of death, you're able to let go and say, I've done what I could, my Lord, and chant His holy name, and then Lord Chaitanya will give you a big hug. And you'll be home back to Goddess. That's what we're going for. That's where we're going. So I pray that everybody starts using their intelligence to think of ways that we can present Krishna consciousness, and especially in the book Marathon that's coming up. I know Bhakti and I are going to make an endeavour, and at Gopal's we're going to make an endeavour. We pray that everybody will also assist in that. So I'll stop here. Any comments or questions for Bruce? Yes, Bruce. Yeah, I think that's a good comment. We have to stay Prabhupada conscious, you know. I'm not so sure as far as sometimes, and I mean that was even when Prabhupada was here, you know, there'd be a room so packed. You don't have to be so rigidly attached. You know, like sometimes you also have people coming in who don't know the etiquette, and they'll turn their back to Prabhupada or offer their obeisances to the deities. I mean, you know, you just have to be mindful of that. It's more that we keep Prabhupada within our heart. Like Vidyananda Maharaj was saying at his the Prabhupada's disappearance day, more and more we have to make Prabhupada appear, you know. Like I was mentioning to Nanda Mandir the other day, that in some temples it's a regular thing that at least once a week they have a lecture by Srila Prabhupada instead of a Bhagavatam class given by a devotee. I honestly feel that that is a really good thing. You know, that we sit around Srila Prabhupada and we listen to a class given by Prabhupada. And I think, you know, I hope that it becomes a standard. I really like that. You know, and sometimes when we get caught up with our own spiritual masters, it's sometimes the last thing that we do is listen to a tape of Srila Prabhupada, a lecture of Prabhupada. But Prabhupada's lectures are just so sublime, so powerful, you know, that it's worth making that endeavour. Not to let Prabhupada disappear, but actually appear. Yeah? We owe him everything. Absolutely, we owe him everything. Yeah, I've quite taken, absolutely. Thank you. Any other comments or questions for us? Jai, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada, peace.